Young girl, you were not born only to cook. Your youth is not to be ruined. You were not born a victim. Were not born an instrument for a man's enjoyment. Start your new life. Stride along your path. And if a sad song is in your heart, keep in your ear an anthem of liberation. If chains enslave you, break them down, just as they broke down the Berlin Wall. We, your true brothers, swear. We, your obedient sons, swear that no one can attack or insult you. No one can dishearten you or stop you on your way. Because we too can be brave enough to break the chains that enslave us, we too will think afresh. Those words were written in 1997 by a young father-to-be as he awaited the birth of his daughter, whom he named Malala. He ran a girls' school in their village in the Swat Valley in Pakistan until the Taliban came. And among many, many other things, they decreed that females were not worthy of being educated. So at the age of 11, Malala was ejected from her school and yet began to speak out for the rights of girls for an education. She returned secretly to school, and so it was that in October 2012, when she was just 15, a gunman climbed aboard her school bus, asked the simple question, "Who is Malala?" and shot her. 10 days later, she woke up in hospital in Birmingham, here in the UK. The doctors and nurses explained the attack to her and told her that people around the world were praying for her. After years of surgery and rehabilitation, supported by her father, she created the Malala Fund with one clear aim: to enable girls across the globe simply the opportunity to pursue a future of their choosing. In December 2014, she was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in recognition of her work, becoming the youngest ever recipient of a Nobel laureate. 2,000 years earlier, another teenage girl, Mary, her own life disrupted, not by a bullet, but by a bulletin, if you will, some news that, like Malala's life, would turn Mary's on its head. And, make no mistake, like Malala's, put her very life at risk. And the 2,000 years between Mary and Malala have been populated with the systematic oppression of women, the denial of justice, and their disempowerment. You might well be wondering how appropriate that theme is for a Christmas talk, and indeed how wise. If M&S window displays or the BBC's own Christmas advert can get it so wrong and draw so much rage from social media, what chance a male, pale, and very probably stale vicar to get it right? There is a world of rage and venom waiting for those who mistake their words. And yet this theme seems urgent to me. It might seem easier to speak about the other crises facing our world, the rise of populism, climate change, racism, mental health, It might even be easier to talk about Brexit. No, of course not. But the conflict between men and women. And I think we should make no mistake that we stand at a moment in history where women's voices are being heard as never before. Provides a lens through which to observe the fractured reality of what it is to be human. Malala's foundation will need to reach 130 million girls in our world if all girls are to be given an education. 130 million girls denied education. 35% of women globally have suffered or are suffering violence of one extreme or another. And 2/3 of women, according to the United Nations, say that they live in fear or with little confidence of their future. And you may say to me, well, you are a vicar, is not the church complicit? And the simple answer is yes, the church has been complicit. Over those 2,000 years, on too many occasions and too consistently, the church has been on the wrong side, has neglected its own teachings, its own scriptures, and too often stood with the oppressor and not with the oppressed. And that does two things to somebody like me. Firstly, it makes it incredibly hard to stand and speak these words, and yet it makes it impossible for me not to. And I hope you understand that tension. Because the church must speak and correct what has been and be part of dreaming and imagining a better future. The church, along with the rest of the world, has to listen to the truth and pain of women denied justice. Yes, also to the truth and pain of men falsely accused for allowing an accusation to be the equivalent of a conviction serves neither women nor men. I believe that I stand before a room full of people, though I know not most of you, who want to live for a better future, who want to imagine a different story, where instead of tokenism, we can celebrate difference, where instead of objectifying and degrading, we can celebrate mutuality. Well, you say again, surely even in that second reading, we heard God speak about the conflict between male and female. And yes, we did. But we must be careful to distinguish God's description from God's desire and his design. If we jump back two chapters in Genesis to the very origins of the Hebrew Christian understanding, the book of Genesis, from which we get the words genes and genealogy, we see that God did, firstly, put a man on his own in charge of the planet. And very rapidly had to say, this is not a good idea. I thought that would get a better response. One of the mysteries of the very restrained compared with the other ancient Near Eastern creation stories of the story and account in Genesis is that at its very heart, when God looked for a creature who would do one primary thing to reflect who he is to the world, a man on his own was not enough. A man and a woman was needed. And so another reason for focusing on this gender inequality, which isn't just about violence, but about the denial of economic equality, the denial of opportunity, as well as the denial of justice, is because when we stand one against the other. And you could say the same when people of one color fight against people of another, but when one gender fights against another, we are tearing at the fabric of what it is to be human. Since hashtag MeToo, there have been so many articles, wringing hands, suggesting solutions. Increasingly, I'm reading that men need to give women equality. The problem for me with that is it suggests that the equality of women is in the gift of men to give. And when I read the beginning of the Bible, it seems it was a gift of God in creation that ought to be recognized and celebrated. In Genesis 16, we have an incident which results out of male oppression of women. You may not be familiar with the life of Abraham. He was one of the patriarchs, from which we get the sense of a patriarchal society and so on. And Abraham and his wife Sarah had been promised by God that through their biological offspring, a great nation would be born to bless the planet. The clock was tick-tock ticking, and all hope was fading. And it was the custom in those days, in that situation, for the wife to give her husband one of her serving girls in order that she might have children through that woman. The woman chosen was called Hagar. She was an Egyptian, and she was Abraham's property, gained whilst he was living in Egypt. And in due course, she produced a son. And Abraham's wife began to treat her viciously. And so she ran with her son into the desert. Now here is the point of this story. Throughout the Old Testament, when the Hebrew writers want to speak of God himself, making himself known to individuals, the phrase so often used is the angel of the Lord. The first time in the Bible that that phrase is used is not of God's appearance in some great palace or to some great man, but in a desert under a tree where this woman and her son are taking shelter from the noonday sun. As a slave girl back in Egypt, she would have been invisible to the gods, invisible to Pharaoh, invisible to nearly everybody. And she names the God who meets with her in that desert place, the God who sees me. It may seem unlikely here, but if you are a woman who has been denied justice, who has been oppressed, who has been disempowered, know that there is a God who sees you. One more Bible story, if I may. And again, you may or may not be familiar with it. This time it is from the adult life of the boy born to Mary, Jesus, whose birth we celebrate. He's in the big city. He's teaching the crowds. And some religious leaders bring to him and fling at his feet a woman that they accuse of being caught in the act of adultery. And they ask him to pass verdict on her and determine whether she will be stoned. It's a horrific passage. The Bible records that Jesus sits with her in the dust and pauses before speaking. And although I have no evidence for this, I cannot help wondering whether at that moment the adult Jesus remembered in his childhood or teenage years stories told to him by his mother Mary of accusing words and pointing fingers, because that is precisely what people assumed of her when she was pregnant with him. He sits with this woman. He rebukes those who condemn. And when they have gone, restoring something of her dignity, he raises her to her feet. He speaks words of life, compassion, a refusal to judge, and an invitation to live in a new way. Malala's father's poem bears the title, I Promise. And it ends with this vow. Speaking of himself and men, he says, we too can be brave enough to break the chains that enslave us. We too will think afresh. And he has gone on to do that. And yet for so many of us, our vows are so easily broken. You see before you someone who will do anything for a perfect body, except diet and exercise. How quickly our promises, even to ourselves, are broken. And here lies the distinctive of the Christian message, the distinctive of the Christmas story, the distinctive of this baby. That whereas most of us seek to make the world a better place by what we can do, Jesus offers a way to make the world a better place when we get to the end of what we can do and when we recognize that we cannot do it on our own. The image of Jesus with that woman in the dust, rebuking those who condemn, refusing to cast the stone, speaking words of life and compassion and newness, may be an image for each of us here. Not just of what is wrong with the human condition in general, but what is broken inside me and you. And if this Christmas time we will pause and look to him, we'll find in his face and on his lips the same compassion and words of life that he spoke and gave to that woman. And at this Christmas time, part of our response can be learning afresh to say sorry. Sorry to Mary and Malala and all the women they have represented. But beyond that, saying sorry to Mary's son, who to the world's rage and venom and desire to punish stands time and time again before us and says, pour your rage and venom on me. Punish me. Nail me. And I will take your place and set you free forever.
Mary, I'm sorry for all that we've done, for the ways we've betrayed the ways of your Son. Mary, forgive us. Hail Mary of grace. He taught us the cross. We nailed him in place. Mary, you wound him, but suffered the shame of the fingers that pointed, appointing their blame. Unmarried and pregnant, what had she done? And what could become of an ill-begot son. But angels did herald, while Herod did rage, at the birth of this child who would birth a new age, of life over death, and of love over law, and blessed the meek, and blessed the poor, and blessed those who mourn, and hearts that are pure, the certain of faith, and those that aren't sure. Blessed the children and right over might. A world revolution. And yet, not quite. Because he came to bring peace, but still we choose war. To free the oppressed who we've oppressed more. To humble the rich we've put them on thrones, to rush not to judge, we threw the first stones. He mothered his tribe, we gassed them like flies. Welcomed the outcast, yet we still despise. Told us we're equal, perhaps, one or two. Honored all women. Now it's hashtag me too. And yet, every Christmas, we're back at this birth. The carpenter's lad who had crafted the earth, we're there in that stable with curious kings and the gentlest rustle of angelic wings. We shuffle with shepherds, not sure what we see in the dung and the feed. Is this majesty? And Mary, you cradle our hope to your breast, the one who will die while we will be blessed. Jesus, I'm sorry for all that I've done, for the ways I've betrayed, the ways of the Son. And Jesus, each Christmas, looks into my face and says, I forgive you. Start over with grace. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light, he came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision, or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth.